It's a Both Sides program right here on Super Talk 800 KREI. Great to see Al Sullivan and Tom Burcham once again as we talk it over from the right and from the left with a few political issues every month with these two gentlemen. Is it? I was thinking about the show. And
you're ahead of us.
Right. You guys were coming in, and I had this mental image, you know, of what I see right now, and I made a mental note. I was like, I need to ask them, is it on purpose, and did it happen from the very first time that Tom, you always sit to the right of Al, and Al always sits to the left of you.
Yeah, it's been that way since. Yes, yeah, I think it was a joke.
Somebody, Louie or Tom, somebody, we came in and said, "Well, we better put Al on the left and Tom on the right." Okay. And we laughed, and that's been the seating arrangement ever since.
That's where we are, literally and metaphorically.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So. Yeah. And ideologically.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Ideologically.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. So we're gonna bat around a few issues here today. And you guys always provide me with notes, and then I just get to lob up the softballs and get the heck out of the way. And every now and again, I'll interject something as well. That's very not good. So bad. The first topic, though, that we're going to talk about today, the good slash bad of investigations of politicians. That's a good question, place to start.
That was a topic that I suggested. The Mueller report's going to be released here in just a few minutes. And I haven't heard anybody talk about this, so I wanted to talk about it. But it seems like there's been, for decades, really, a never-ending parade of investigations in Washington. And I jotted down just a few that came to memory. The Iran-Contra affair in Reagan's administration, the Valerie Plame affair in the Bush administration took up a ton of oxygen. Bill Clinton, just during his presidency, there was Whitewater, cattle futures, his sexual aggressions, Travelgate, obviously the Monica Lewinsky issue. In Obama, we had the Benghazi, the IRS targeting conservatives, the Fast and Furious, and Hillary Clinton's emails, and it just seems like there's it just seems like it's one investigation in Washington after another, and I think they're done, in my view, primarily to appeal to the base of one party or the other. The liberal Democrat or conservative Republican really hates the president, whoever the president happens to be, and they want to. They want to think bad things about the president, and by gosh, they want their party to investigate the president's wrongdoing. And all of these investigations take place, and nothing ever happens. You know, the upshot of all of those scandals that I just named is a net absolute goose egg, except to drag on and on and on. And I think it, while it may appeal to the basis of either party, depending on what the investigation is, I think it turns off the general population. I mean, I think they become fatigued with it, become cynical. You know, all they see are these politicians in Washington fighting. And I think the Mueller report is just the latest example. You know, we went on for 2 years, and what we're going to see in the Mueller report is apparently a big goose egg in terms of collusion. And I just think, you know, we need to, both parties need to take a closer look at these things before they dive in.
I agree with Tom in general principle, but I think the water is very muddy because of young people maybe not tuned in and understanding when they take their government class, a busy population that's looking for news bites, and a media that tends to make much of this. And to me, Congress to do anything has to function by committee and have a hearing, whether you're looking at a bill or you're doing anything else. So everything's done by committee, and I think it gets convoluted that everything's an investigation. And I tried to divide it out into investigation versus oversight. The Congress has a certain oversight, and the only way it can do its oversight is through committee hearings. They have hundreds of hearings we never hear about on bills and amendments and that sort of thing. That's the way it functions. But I don't know that the public separates that. And then, of course, we get to the special prosecutor time three times, but that functions a little bit differently than an open public hearing. And so as a result of what Congress has done, I supported all three special prosecutors, the Nixon, the Clinton, and the Trump. And the reason being that I felt it needed to go forward, all three men were a liar. And they were caught up in their untruths. And so it caused a further investigation. Now, nobody was tried for perjury, but it did take its great toll, and it greatly destroyed the presidency of the United States that you would have these three men in a short period of history who really had trouble coming to the truth. And so I think the idea that it's all one thing, it really isn't. The special prosecutor, then how the special prosecutor handles that investigation, I think is very important. We've seen all things. One who made almost everything public daily and it was in the news, Mueller, I don't know that he made over one or two statements in a two-year period, which is the way a grand jury and investigation should be. But I do think the public is terribly confused and think every time a congressman asks a question that they're trying to grandstand or to do something else. But they have to function by the committee. So I think it's just unfortunate, as Tom says, I think it drives people away from politics because when everything's always in a turmoil. And when an indictment or something coming out of a special prosecutor can affect the stock market or have it hold steady or something else. These are serious issues that weigh upon the wellness or in the health of this nation. So I agree with Tom in principle that we need to sort it out and we need to be careful when we go and where we go.
Tom, I'm going to go all the way back. Do you think that the modern era of political investigations began with Watergate?
Yeah, I think it was born in Watergate, and because Watergate was such...
Which there was a resolution.
Right, exactly. Because there was, obviously a consequence of a president resigning, that since then there's been a heated, accelerated... desire to investigate because maybe we can knock the other side's president out if we investigate enough.
Yeah.
And there have been scandals in the past. It's not the Teapot Dome scandal in the 20s, and there were some obviously problems in President Grant's administration, although he was not a part of it. But it's not like today where there's just one after another investigation. Al draws a good distinction between the special prosecutors and the and the congressional oversight. And congressional oversight is a legitimate function of Congress. But many of these investigations have turned from oversight to being politically driven, number one, in Congress. I find the more troubling issue, though, and this is both sides are seeking to get criminal law enforcement investigations underway. The Republicans used to chant, lock her up. About Hillary Clinton, and that was initially kind of funny, but then you began to see high-profile Republicans who were thinking people discourage that, because when we use the law enforcement and the criminal system to investigate politicians for, let's face it, what are political purposes. We're turning ourselves. I mean, that's what you see in banana republics. That's what you see in communist regimes. That's what you see in tin pot despot governments, is to use the Department of Justice or their equivalent or law enforcement for political purposes. I think it's taken an even more dangerous turn than just wearing out the public and turning them off.
Now, the examples, plural, that you gave earlier, you were right. It was a net zero. But let's move a little bit closer to home in modern day. Eric Greitens lost his office. He was forced to step down as the result of some of these investigations, the governor of Missouri.
He was forced to resign. And I am a huge, there's probably no bigger supporter of our current governor than me. That said, for me to sit here and look you in the eye and say that the accusations against Eric Reins weren't politically driven would be dead wrong. They were made by Democrats who wanted him out of office. They were made by Republicans who wanted him out of office. And let me ask you this. What has been proven that Eric Reins actually did? Are any of those accusations, have they ever been proven? No. As soon as he resigned, they said, well, that's what we got, what we wanted, we're done. So it's still politics, Chad.
And again, from an entertainment standpoint, and I hate to use that word, but when they 24/7 news broadcasts cover all these hearings, and then they interrupt major programming for a congressional hearing and knock the soap operas and everything off there, you're in the entertainment business, and the great temptation for people on either political side to grandstand and free campaigning. It's what you're getting mass media coverage for nothing that you'd be paying millions for if you were trying to buy and get that on the air, and people wouldn't be watching it. Because if you take off my soap opera, I either watch no TV or I watch the investigation. And if you're a CNN or all these other network things, then they just thrive on that sort of thing. So I'm not blaming the media. It's a matter that we have changed what's before the public, and I don't think we've done in the classroom, maybe we've done the education. It's difficult with a young person to try to distinguish all these things that we've talked about this morning. And if you're driving down the road listening to your radio and you get sound bites and you don't get any follow-up, I can see where the public gets confused. Tom and I breathe the stuff and we love it. So, you know, we're kind of junkies of the sort on politics. But most people don't have time for that, or they do something else for their recreation. But we read and look at these things. It's kind of getting our mind off of the things we have, but that's not the general public. So I think there's a real problem with it, of everybody getting it all mixed up, and we just looks like we're one constant. And what does it say to the world with regard to our stability? When every president comes in, and I read an article 20 years ago that talked about there's always going to be a group that wants to destroy the current president. And it's been borne out in the last four presidents or five, that there's a group somewhere that wants to bring down the president.
Of course there are, and those are the groups that these investigations are meant to appeal to. I mean, I talked to somebody who's in Washington a lot, and I believe what he was telling me was true. He and I don't know that it's true anymore, but at the beginning of the Trump presidency, he said he was being told by liberal Democrats, even elected people and staffs of elected Democrats, that they simply couldn't at that point do anything, that the only thing they could do was say bad things about Donald Trump, because if they said anything else, you know, their constituency was upset with them. And so these investigations are meant to appeal to districts like that, to supporters like that, who are just rabid partisans. But it doesn't make good policy, and it doesn't make good government, and it doesn't it's not good for all of us.
Al, I thought you made an interesting observation in your first comment, because you said you found a commonality with some of the investigations Tom was talking about. You said they were dishonest.
Mm-hmm.
Modern day public relations always says the best thing to do is get out in front of anything, to be completely transparent and get all the information out. And even if somebody is dishonest, if they end up doing that quickly, a lot of times they'll still be forgiven, but that's not what has happened.
Well, I believe that's true in not just in PR, but in life and everything else. As a lawyer, you're told, look, if your client's got a problem, you get it out in voir dire when you're questioning the jury. You know, look, are you going to hold it against my client if he's a drug addict? Are you going to hold it against my client if he's been convicted of something? And it's true in life, too. People are generally forgiving as long as you get out there and admit the problem, the mistake you've made. I think
over the years I've known many of the local attorneys and enjoyed their company, but if there was one common theme as we talked about the legal practice, was the fact that it's so hard to convince my client to be honest with me. I'm representing you, and I'm going to do everything I can, but you've got to tell me if there's skeletons in the closet. We can't face them in the courtroom. And again, that's deviating from the truth. And it's to me, step up to the plate, and if there's something, you say something. But when you when you're never contrite about anything, we have a president that has never said, I didn't have all the information. That's all you need to say. I didn't have all the information, and therefore I didn't present the right response. That's not a lie. Yeah. That's not untruth. It happens to all of us. But this man cannot come to the face anything that you would be contrite or apologetic for or anything else. Nixon and Clinton weren't any better. They had big egos, and some of the quotes that have come out of this recent documentation by Nixon would shake his Quaker friends pretty hard.
Yeah. Reagan was great at that.
Yeah.
I didn't have all the information. Yeah.
And you could believe him. No, yeah. I'm kidding. No, but I'm a Reagan fan.
Me too.
My mother used to talk about people who couldn't tell the truth when it suited best, any other time they didn't tell the truth.
Yeah. Well, it's the old saying, you never lie to your doctor, your lawyer, or your priest. Yeah. Al's right. And I'll just repeat him. If there's anybody that knows it, if you come clean and, the public's forgiving, the community's forgiving.
We all make mistakes.
Yeah, and people who reach any level of maturity understand that we all make mistakes.
All right, let's move on. You want to talk sports betting, huh?
Was my topic too.
Yeah, that's kind of sexy. Let's do it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. It's real high on the interest factor. But earlier this week, a sports betting proposal passed out of a House committee in Missouri. Whether it will pass this year or not remains to be seen, and if it passes, in what form remains to be seen. But I think it's interesting. A lot of folks know this, but last year the Supreme Court struck down a federal ban on sports betting. And since then, I think today the sports betting is legal in 7 states. And a lot of online betting is legal.
And more on the way.
And more is on the way. That's exactly right. There are at least 10 other states that have sports betting going through the legislative process some way. And so it's on its way. It may not be on its way to Missouri this year, but it's on its way someday. And it's already in a number of states. So I thought it was an interesting topic to talk about. Whatever you think about betting, and a lot of people don't think highly of it, and I don't, I don't bet. But there is a black market out there. There are people betting, and this is a form of prohibition, and it's probably better to be addressed out in the open, transparently, than it is to go on, behind doors, closed doors.
Is it kind of one of those, hey, are we going to be legislating morality questions again?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to.
No, go ahead.
But it's one of the problems for Republicans. This is always the problem. There's a significant portion of folks who vote Republican who are very socially conservative, regular church goers who are going to oppose a betting proposition in any form whatsoever. There were a lot of legislators when I was there, and I'm sure there still are, that simply would not take any sort of help from any sort of casino or other wagering entity for that reason.
When I was in Jefferson City, the Democrats were as much in control as the Republicans are now. And it was always a horse racing bill back in the 60s and 70s. And the legislators in this 6 or 7 county area would go to the speaker, because they had a large majority, and say, you've got to excuse me. I've got to vote against that. I can't go home and survive against the horse racing. And it finally came. But, that was the pressure that was on anti-betting. My only concern with gambling is that, and you'll never stop it, is the number of people who participate in legal or illegal gambling that can't afford it.
Sure.
And that's where the real downfall to society comes. Once you get past it, gambling, prostitution, et cetera, drinking, you're never going to stamp those things out. So I think it's better, as Tom says, to have some regulation, some format of it, maybe have a little more honest dealing with the people who are playing than the black market. And, and I'm not against a social game of poker at somebody's house, but it's not. Technically, it's not legal. But I think the issue that everyone has to address, and it can be as terribly addictive as many other forms of behavior are, if you're into it, then I would rather see some parameters, some regulation, and that sort of thing. So I think, for the most part, we're in complete agreement on this because we're not going to wipe out gambling. It's going on. The office pool, they used to be some pretty good office pools in Jefferson City on football games and everything else as far as going around collecting money. And it was all done in fun and for recreation. But, man, it made me a nervous wreck that, you know, somebody really made a big issue out of it because a lot of folks had egg on their face and they were just doing it for fun every week.
Well, sometimes is it a simple question? Like Al said, people are going to gamble anyway. Why let every other state collect money on it if we're not going to?
Particularly if it's online betting. If you're not, you know, I can go to get online to some Indiana entity and gamble.
Yeah, I'm not here to propose it, but we're going to have it. So let's get a handle on it, as the old boy says.
Politically, it's always a dilemma for Republicans because, as I said, you've got the socially conservative block in the Republican Party, but you know what? You also have the Libertarian block, you know, which says that, hey, you know, people ought to be able to be free to do what they want as long as it doesn't harm somebody else. And gambling and some of the other vices fit right into that philosophy. And so it's a more difficult issue, I think, for Republican lawmakers than it is Democrat lawmakers.
Except if you're from the Bible Belt or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there aren't any Democrats left in the Bible Belt.
No. So, folks, I mean, taking care of that.
All right. Only a few minutes left. Do you want to go ahead and float our third one out there and get a statement anyway?
Yeah. Sure.
St. Louis City County merger. That's been an idea that's been around a long time, hasn't it?
It's been around a long time. It's seen some resurgence. There's a group called Better Together, which is really well funded. That has proposed merging all of the, I think there are hundreds of political subdivisions in St. Louis County with the city and consolidating them into one government, which is the situation in almost all of the other major cities in the United States. I don't know that it's better. I don't think you're going to get it passed. I think there's too many people in those small communities, particularly elected officials, who have too much vested in being separate that you're going to get it passed. And I don't know that it's a good solution if it did pass. I do know that something's got to happen in St. Louis. I mean,
the places, my brother lives in Indianapolis, Indiana, for the last 35 or 40 years, and that county and city were separated and been put together, and he had nothing but praise for what's come out of it. The other, I can't name this morning, the couple of others that have happened in recent decades seem to be a successful merger. But when you teach Missouri state government, you teach 114 counties and the city of St. Louis. And I don't think many people realize that the city of St. Louis has a list of county officials just like St. Louis County has. Well, the first thing you're going to do is abolish all of that unnecessary layer of government and begin to merge it. And I think as a region, St. Louis will maybe recover and go forward better. But you just look at the growing places. We've got two other metropolitan areas in Missouri, Kansas City, Jackson County, Kansas City, Greene County, and Springfield. It's a major metropolitan area and all across the nation. So it isn't a matter that it can't function because this has been functioning for 100 plus years. But I think there are economies of operation and things that bring them together, just like on the sports complex. Again, what would have happened if the county council hadn't approved the funding of the city, St. Louis council? But it benefits the whole region of St. Louis's economy to make those upgrades. And I think these are the things you can see that simplify it. Get it through one legislative body is tough enough. To get it through two legislative bodies on something that's kind of a slam dunk, the county's in a turmoil with their executive and their council. And so I think it's a win-win. I agree with Tom. I don't believe it will pass. I think it's unfortunate. But
something's got to happen. City of St. Louis is down to about 300,000 people. It won't be much longer before there are more people in Jefferson County than there are in the city of St. Louis. There are neighborhoods, you know, there are not neighborhoods to live in. You can't really send your kids to schools. I like to say that every place in the country looks vibrant compared to the city of St. Louis. I mean, I was in Cincinnati a couple of weeks ago on a Sunday evening, and it was vast. It was bustling, and it was vastly more active than St. Louis is at any time, except when there's a Cardinals game downtown. And then, you know, you have people.
Stepdaughter and her husband live in Cincinnati. And it's just a nice place to go visit. I enjoy going there. And it's moving. It's on the go.
The other, and Indianapolis is bustling. I mean, it's just the city of St. Louis. You don't never see a crane. There's a crane currently at Ballpark Village. But other than that, the last time there was a crane in the city of St. Louis that wasn't at BJC, I mean, I don't remember when that was. Mm-hmm. And you know, you go to Nashville, you can't get outside the sight of a crane. And something has got to happen for St. Louis. And I don't know if this is it. I don't think it's passed. I don't know if it did, if that would be the answer. But St. Louis, if something isn't done, is going to continue to decline.
Gentlemen, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Thanks.
Okay. It's the Both Sides program. Al Sullivan and Tom Burcham joining us on KREI.